Good afternoon. I'm going to describe to you the implementation results of a school-based obesity prevention strategy. This work was actually part of a larger study which I described yesterday in the school health services session, actually in this room. For that larger project, we used routinely collected school health data to reassess this school-based intervention. And as part of the reevaluation of that intervention, we looked closely at the implementation so that we could learn something about the issues that might arise when implementing a school-based approach to obesity prevention. I have no conflicts of interest. We very gratefully acknowledge the cooperation we received from the School District of Philadelphia, particularly the staff and principals of the 10 schools that were involved in the original study. We are also thankful to... I'm sorry. Is that better? We also thank the Food Trust and Dr. Gary Foster, a collaborating professor from another university who were involved in designing and implementing the project, and the Food Trust was willing to share with us the process data that they collected during the implementation of this project. And finally, we thank the Thrasher Research Fund for the grant that supported this work. Our objectives in this part of the project are to describe a school-based obesity prevention program that was implemented between 2003 and 2005 in Philadelphia in a subset of Philadelphia schools. We want to assess the implementation of the intervention with regard to school physical facilities and physical activity programs, school self-assessment, nutrition education for teachers and staff, and nutrition education instruction that was given to the students. And finally, we'll talk a little bit about the lessons that we learned from this reassessment. The School Nutrition Policy Initiative was undertaken as part of a randomized controlled trial that was conducted in 10 K through 8 schools in the Philadelphia School District. In 2008, Dr. Gary Foster and his colleagues from the Food Trust and the school district reported on the effects on overweight and obesity of this multifaceted intervention, which was actually implemented during two school years, 2003-04 and 2004-05. The two-year intervention involved school self-assessments for all 10 schools that were conducted using the School Health Index CDC tool. Teachers and staff in the intervention schools only, the five intervention schools only, received nutrition education training. This was done outside of regular school hours, and teachers and staff were paid for the time that they spent taking this these nutrition education training programs. Teachers and staff were then asked voluntarily to provide nutrition education to students in the classroom and to incorporate this nutrition education in any way that they found convenient to instruct their students. There were school nutrition policy changes that were implemented in the five intervention schools only that involved removing certain snacks and sugar-sweetened beverages from vending machines and cafeterias. There was a social marketing campaign to encourage the students to eat healthy food and drink water. And there were family and community outreach efforts to educate parents, guardians, and caregivers about healthy nutrition for children. The baseline characteristics of the study population showed that the control and intervention students, or the students who were attending the control and intervention schools, were similar in terms of distribution by sex. The racial distributions were slightly different. There were more white students and African American students in the control schools and more Hispanic students in the intervention schools. The distribution of students in the grades K through 8 was similar in the control and intervention schools. I'm not showing these data. I'm just telling you about them. About 20% of the students were eligible for special education, and more than 60% of the students in both groups were eligible at some time during the study for free or reduced cost meals. We had a research assistant go out to the 10 schools and make measurements of the gym facilities, the outside play areas, and ask the principals and any staff that they could speak with about recess policies and practices during the period of the intervention, physical education sessions per year for students, and any kinds of sports activities. Now you have to, I'm noting here that these were retrospective data, and in some cases it was difficult to find staff who had actually been there during the 2003 and to 2005 period, since our research assistant went out and collected this information 6 or 7 years later. Nevertheless, we tried to make an effort to get some information about opportunities for physical activity in these schools to see if there were any differences, and we really didn't find any differences among the schools. The school health index was a self-assessment tool. Again, that was provided through the CDC. It was completed by teachers and staff at each school at a pre-intervention baseline, which was actually the year before the intervention began, during intervention year one and intervention year two. We understood from the Food Trust that the teachers and staff completing this index were not the same at each time point, and in fact the data for the second year were really quite spotty, so I'm only going to report on changes between baseline and year one. The index had multiple items, which were scored from 0 to 3. There were 8 modules with 4 to 13 items each, and the scoring scaled the scores on a 0 to 100 scale. There were 5 items in the school health index that we expected might change based on the intervention. These were school health policies and school environment, health education, nutrition services, health promotion for staff and family and community involvement. Of those, the only place where we saw significant because these were not analyzed statistically, but there appeared to be a difference between the control and intervention schools in the observed amount of family and community involvement. But in all these other parameters, which we might have expected to be different between baseline and year one and the two school groups, there were no changes. Oops. Just to look at this graphically, I can point out that only the lower right-hand corner is the one where there were differences. Then this was the family and community services scale. But you can see here that although there was a net decrease in the control schools and a mean increase in the intervention schools, not all the schools in the intervention group actually reported changes in the same direction. There were 3 domains in the school health index where we really didn't expect much difference between the intervention and control schools, and indeed we really didn't see much, and these were physical education and physical activity programs, health services, and counseling and social services. I would point out here that physical activity was not part of the deliberate intervention. We collected that information because we wanted to do a more complete assessment of the environments in the two groups of schools. As far as nutrition education goes, as I mentioned, teachers and staff received instruction outside of school hours. The target was 10 hours per teacher during each year of the intervention, and teachers and staff were reimbursed for attendance at the training sessions. The education to students was delivered by teachers in the classroom, and the target was 50 hours of nutrition education per school year for each student. what actually happened was quite different from the target. The proportion of teachers who received training during the first year was about 61%, and it increased to about 78% during the second year. The mean number of hours of nutrition education per teacher, and that's only, it's using the number of teachers, the teachers who actually attended any sessions, of those who attended sessions in the first year, they averaged about 5 hours of training, and in the second year, only 3.6 hours. The teachers who delivered instruction were also not all the teachers in the schools. About 44% delivered instruction to students in the first year, and a slightly higher percentage, 63%, in the second year. The mean number of hours of student nutrition education per teacher who delivered any education was about 54 during each year. And the mean numbers of hours of nutrition education instruction per student, and here we used as a divisor the total number of children in each grade, since we knew what grades the teachers taught, was about around 35 to 38 hours per student. So we didn't actually, they didn't actually reach the targeted number of education hours. Perhaps the most interesting observation we made when we looked carefully at the process data that we received from the Food Trust was that the proportion of student education instruction delivered in each grade was quite different. It appears that more than 50% of the instruction went to the youngest kids, the kids in kindergarten, first and second grade, and very little of the instruction went to the children in the older grades. The average is the dark value, and the dotted lines represent the proportions of instruction that went to children in each grade by individual school. And although there are a couple schools where some of the second and first and second graders got a reasonable portion of the education, in almost no school was there very much nutrition education delivered to the children above the fourth grade. So in conclusion, we were able to see that the populations of the schools were relatively similar. The physical facilities and physical activity programs were comparable between the control and intervention schools. The school self-assessment did not reflect tremendous changes over time between the control and intervention schools. The teacher nutrition education reached about half of the target teachers and actually only delivered about half of the target number of hours, and the student nutrition education instruction only went, about two-thirds of it went to mainly the lower grades. So we've learned some lessons about the implementation and the issues that arise in trying to implement a school-based nutrition education intervention to prevent overweight and obesity in children in K through 8 schools. Teacher training seems to compete with other of the teachers' responsibilities and priorities. Delivering teacher training outside of school hours doesn't seem to be terribly effective. The classroom student instruction is difficult to incorporate, apparently, particularly in the higher grades. There were, in the course of this intervention, some system-wide nutrition policy changes. So in the first year, the changes in snack food availability and sugary drink availability were limited to the intervention school, but in fact, in the middle of this intervention, the district changed their policy, so it was hard to separate out nutrition policies between the intervention and control schools. Physical activity was not specifically targeted in this intervention, and the parent and community outreach was somewhat spotty, at least if you base that on the school health index. There's clearly a question about whether these kinds of interventions are sustainable, never mind whether they can actually be implemented with good fidelity. I think that's it.